Hi there, and a very warm welcome as every Friday to Beggars Now. It's my great pleasure to welcome two guests here with me today, which I'm pronouncing so heavily because this is a rare treat. Dr. Jörn Quitzau is physically with me. Usually we see each other via screen, Jörn, and I'm really delighted to see you. Hi.
I'm happy to see you as well. Thank you, Aurelia.
It's good to be here, and we are joined by a very special guest. Dr. Jürgen Scharf is with us, who's coming from the EZB, from the European Central Bank. Dr. Scharf, Jürgen, hi.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
It's really wonderful to see you. And I have the great luxury today to step aside a little bit, because you too have a topic here today, which is, it requires some deeper knowledge, let's just say that. It is definitely not my area of expertise, so I'm very gladly joining you in a conversation, but I will let that conversation unfold between the two experts. So with that, Jörn, please, this is your interview today together.
Yeah, thank you, Aurelia. And we try to put some light on this topic. And I'm very happy to have you here, Jürgen. You are an expert for digital topics. I know that you were at Deutsche Bank Research in the early 2000s. And you were an expert for digital change, and now you are with the European Central Bank for many, many years. And still you are an expert on digital money, on digital aspects. And I would like to discuss with you or ask some questions regarding the digital euro. I think there is a long discussion about the digital euro for some years now, and many people outside here, and I think many of our listeners do not know what the project of the digital euro means. So let me ask you my first question. What is the digital euro?
Yes, thank you very much for the question. Indeed, the topic is complex.
Yeah.
And I will allude a bit in more detail in the next couple of minutes. But let's start with the most simple definition of what the digital euro would be. It would be a digital version of our cash, a physical version of euro banknotes, mm-hmm. the money of the euro area with which people pay, and which is, and now we are already entering the sphere of economics, which is central bank money. So we have a hybrid banking system. The central bank provides the hard money, the public money, which is for the normal people is cash, the banknotes. If you put it on your bank, it's somehow transformed via their balance sheet into commercial bank money and private money. You are entitled to go to your bank and convert your bank deposits at par, that means at the same value, back to central bank money, to cash, which is more secure, despite all the progress that we have made in making the banking sector more stable. So it's money for the people issued by the central bank, which is the safest and most liquid asset that we know. And we know this for centuries. Now, why are we doing this? We are observing that people pay less and less at the point of sale, as we say among experts, with cash.
Mm.
People have a preference for more comfort, easiness, speed, at the same time having an overview about their balances, and they pay electronically with cards, be it credit cards, then online with some payment service providers and many other things. Now, we are seeing for years that the usage of cash is going down in retail payments. And although there's still in the euro area a slight majority of payments, if you count the transactions still in cash, the trend is clear.
Mm-hmm.
And the worry that is among central bankers, not only in Europe, is that the role of central bank money, public money, could disappear. So, and you could say, well, I don't need this. I like to pay with credit card, debit card, you name it. But there are some underlying elements that are important, which worries a central bank, not necessarily noticed and understood by a broader audience. For example, money has the function to be a unit of account, and everything that we have with a price tag refers to the euro. It's denominated in euro. And it's important not only that you can transfer your bank account money to another bank, the whole system is kept stable and sound and resilient by the fact that you can convert your bank account money into cash. And what has been observed in the last decades or centuries is when there is a banking crisis, this not so widespread knowledge is materializing and people run to the banks. That's why we call it a bank run, and try to exchange their money from the bank into cash. So there's a bit of an issue. So people have the preference to pay it electronically, but electronic payments so far are not in central bank money. Therefore, we want to combine the soundness and safety of central bank money like cash with the comfort of modern electronic payments. Second point is that currently we don't have any electronic means of payment with which you can pay in the entire euro area. So if you have your bank account in Europe, in the euro area, with a SEPA transfer, you can transfer your money from a bank in Finland to a bank in Portugal. But there's no means of payment from Europe with which you can pay in the entire euro area, except for cash. This is not really what a currency union should look like. Switzerland, for example, is different. There you have some private modern means of payments, but it's usable and accepted in the entire country. With the euro area, it's different. We have some with which you can pay all over Europe, but that are the credit cards. But the major credit cards are all non-European, they're American. So you have MasterCard, Visa card, American Express. There comes a political motivation into play why we are doing this. It's about the sovereignty of our payments and money. So although this is all fine, we have learned some lessons in the last decades that if you rely in whatever supply chain almost entirely by suppliers from abroad, we are getting vulnerable. So we've seen this with medication, drugs, medical drugs from China. We've seen it with energy from Russia. Mm. If the dependence of an external provider is too big, you're vulnerable, and you don't want to experience this with money. So there's this political motivation in order to protect the monetary sovereignty, to increase our resilience and autonomy in the realm of money, plus to provide the citizens with a modern means of payment that fulfills all the traits of cash today. That's the package of the digital euro. Mm-hmm. And to close this long, complex definition, more or less it's cash in digital.
Yeah, okay. So my takeaway is that you're making the European financial system fit for the future. And I know that this is work in progress. And where do we stand at the moment? Is there already a decision if the digital euro should be launched, or is it still open, the decision?
We are currently at the end of the preparation phase that took 2 years, mm-hmm. which did conceptual work, experiments, checked for potential providers from the market to do the technical work. And this has been documented. There have been exchanges with the political and market stakeholders. There have been exchanges with the public, with the general public, with experts, academia, and the like. And now, in the coming weeks, there will be a decision by our highest decision-making body, the Governing Council of the European Central Bank, if we proceed with another phase. So the preparation phase is coming to a close by the end of October. And during that time, there will be a decision if and how we proceed. This decision does not necessarily imply the decision to issue and or a time when to issue. Mm-hmm. That's the perspective of the European Central Bank. There's another layer, which is the legislative layer. So we are not alone in this game. Mm-hmm. Currently, there's a process that involves the co-legislators of the EU, namely the European Parliament and the European Council, who are debating, who are discussing, who are vetting the bill by the Commission from end June 2023 in order to create and establish a legislative framework. This is currently a bit stuck in the political debate, and we're expecting in the course of next year the co-legislators to have their legislation final, and this is important input to us. So when we want to calibrate the digital euro, there are a lot of elements that derive from the legislation. Mm-hmm. And what we can say roughly is that once the legislation is there, we need again another 2 to 2.5 years before we can effectively issue a digital euro.
So it's still work in progress, but you have achieved a lot of progress so far. What are the other central banks are planning or doing? Will the CBDC, the central bank digital currencies, will they be a standard in the future, or how do the other big central banks behave at the moment?
What can be said is that since 2018, roughly, most of the central banks have embarked somehow in work on retail CBDCs, retail central bank digital currencies.
Yeah.
Some are more advanced than others. Some even have withdrawn from their projects. But currently, roughly between 95 and 99% of all central banks in the world are somehow in preparation work for CBDCs. The big ones, before I come to that, the goals of the various central banks when they are experimenting, testing, or reflecting on this are often relying on different environments. While they are confronted with the fact that cash is on the retreat in terms of payments, the bespoke solution that they are developing depend on their circumstances. Like Jamaica and the Bahamas were the first to effectively issue a CBDC, and their goal and intention to do so had a lot to do with the fact that these are islands. Mm-hmm. And they were affected by devastating hurricanes and the like, and the provision and supply of cash was difficult with the smaller islands with low population density. Mm. We are not affected by this, but our goal is different. As I said, we want to complete the currency union and we want to protect the monetary autonomy of the euro area. And others face similar challenges, have sometimes different goals in African countries, for example, also in Latin American countries. Financial inclusion plays a big role, which is also a goal of the digital euro, but admittedly, the situation of financial exclusion is much better in Europe than in the other areas that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
So the US basically has pulled the plug.
Yeah.
So the Fed was never too keen on developing a retail CBDC, but now effectively this is off the table. The Bank of England slows down. China is doing a lot of progress in terms of its piloting. They have piloting in big cities with huge figures, which are, if you look in relative terms, less big, but it's quite advanced. India is currently trying to implement piloting with an CBDC. So all over the globe, there's something going on, but the pace is different in the respective jurisdictions, and also the respective goals are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I think this was a very good overview. But finally, I have one more question, which is, I think, discussed in parts of Germany, at least. Some people fear that the central bank, the ECB, might abolish cash when the digital euro comes. This means this is the end of the physical cash. Can you tell those people something about the intentions of the ECB?
This is entirely excluded. Mm-hmm. So basically in every speech that our president or our board member or our senior staff is giving on the digital euro, it's made absolutely clear that we will continue to provide cash.
Yeah.
So the goal is not to abandon cash or replace cash. It's a reaction to a trend that we see and to make sure that people can pay in the future with central bank money. The retreat of cash in payments, in retail payments, is not driven by the central banks, neither in Switzerland, neither in Norway, neither in the euro area. It's happening. And we are offering an additional option. It's not a replacement. And what is evidence of this is that both the Commission has adopted a bill which strengthens the role of cash in the euro area, strengthens its legal tender status that it has to be accepted whenever possible. And also the European Central Bank has issued an opinion on this, which was calling even stronger for the acceptance of cash. So those people who don't want to pay electronically for whatever reason should be able to do so. And we continue to provide banknotes. We're even working on new series with new design, with new security traits, in order to make it more stable. So our commitment to cash is not disputed, and we will provide it as long as it's demanded and used.
Yeah. And I just read, I read a couple of months ago that even in the Scandinavian countries, they try to stop the trend to cashless payment because they fear that there might be cyber attacks or something like that, so that they try to establish or that they try to keep the infrastructure to be able to pay with the cash. Yeah.
Yeah, in the Scandinavian countries, the usage of cash is much, much smaller than in Europe and has reached a level compared to other means of payment that is, if there's no alternative in terms of paying with central bank money, is worrying.
Yeah.
And indeed, there's the attempt to revive cash as a means of payment.
Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you very much, Jürgen. I think this was a very good overview. But Aurelia, maybe you do have one more question. Or?
Well, I just think this was an incredibly interesting overview, I have to say. I think that there's maybe also a little bit of a weird kind of uncertainty if this is coming or if this is not coming, the meaning of it. And I think that was extremely clarifying. So I don't necessarily have a pressing question. I just welcome these developments because I belong to those people who has no cash anymore.
Yeah.
Which is also sometimes an issue because sometimes you just simply need it. And I quite like it. But just for, I guess it's just for convenience reasons. I just don't carry any cash anymore. So I belong to the group that is making this a probable necessity for sure. Do we have any last questions, or is there anything that we, Jörn, didn't ask that we should have asked? Is there anything you would like to add?
Maybe I reply to what you just said.
Absolutely,
now.
Please.
I understand, I hear you. I also have a preference for non-cash payments, and I work for a central bank, and I know the underlying procedures and the structures and the like. But the normal citizens not necessarily knows about this, and it's a good thing that they don't need to know, because they know there's someone who takes care. But it's a bit like if you think I don't need cows because the milk is in the fridge, or I don't need the sewage and I don't need the pipes for the water because my water comes from the tap in the bathroom and the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are complex, they are interconnected. And the fact that central bank money with the banks, but also with cash, are somehow the glue that keep the whole different ways we pay and the monies that we know, be they private, that keeps that together. And it's not necessarily important to understand this if you are a user and citizens, but it's important that someone takes care.
No, I really do think, Jürgen, if I just may say that there were several things that you pointed to that I think are really not commonly discussed, right? I think also a quick draw might be, oh, digital euro, that's another cryptocurrency, or has to do with that, right? Like, we're moving all of our currency sort of more into the digital / crypto space. And of course, it's a very different thing, right? I got that right.
Oh, Lord. Yes. Oh, Lord.
Good.
We are confronted with this comparison frequently. So the fact that the digital euro is digital and crypto is digital is the only trait that the two have in common.
Yeah.
Conceptually, economically, the range of other things is so long, they have nothing in common. The key difference is that a true crypto or an original crypto asset, we don't say currency, an asset, is not backed by anything. It's not issued by anything. You have no entity that is the counterpart in your exchange. You have no claim against anybody. If you have a banknote or in the future a digital euro, you have a claim against the central bank of the European Union, which is backed by the legal system of almost 400 million people, backed by the economy, backed by the finance system of that, supported by a legal system that is strong and respected globally. You have a claim against this system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have a Bitcoin, you have a claim against nobody. If you're lucky, you find someone who gives you some money. If you're even luckier, you find someone who gives you more, but you have no guarantee and you are not entitled to do so. And the other weaknesses of the crypto sphere, we don't have to discuss this now, but the fundamental issue is that with the normal money, also banks, if you have your bank deposits, you have a claim against the bank. And in our legal system, this is protected. There are rules what banks can do with that money. It's taken care of, it's supervised, it's audited to keep this stable. In crypto, you don't have this.
Jürgen, thank you for clarifying that. I think that's the cherry on top, because that is a bit confusing, right? If you just hear it, I guess that people's assumptions might be misleading them.
No, absolutely. I'm confronted with that confusion
I'm
all the
sure.
time.
And so we are talking about the future of money. Yeah? So
yeah.
It's all about the future. And so it's hard to imagine certain things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Maybe I give you an analogy to understand a bit what this is about. Jan, you rightly alluded that it's about the future of money. The characteristics, the traits of money have been the same over the last centuries.
Mm.
Store of value, unit of account, means of payment. The carrier of this can be different. It can be account-based, can be bearer-based, but these traits need to be kept together. Now, it's a bit like if you think of music or the film industry, if you wanted to listen to music, you had to go to a concert. At one point, you had records, and you could carry them and listen to them at home, but just there.
Mm-hmm.
Then, within that line, you were jumping to CDs, for example. And the same with filming. You had the DVDs, then Blu-ray discs. And then there came another innovation. We don't need those bearers anymore. We are streaming. But the underlying quality of the music or the film is unaffected by the way we are carrying them, the way we are storing them, and the way we are distributing them. And the same logic of innovation, the material, the way we distribute them, applies to money, if you will.
That's a very helpful analogy, I have to say.
Yeah.
I really like that. And as somebody who has two record players at home and is a big fan of vinyl.
Yeah, you know that.
I do.
We will also continue to provide cash.
Yes, exactly. See, this is not just for sentimental reasons, but also for I don't know, a certain, there is a usage factor to it too. Well, I want to thank you both. This was delightful and extremely interesting. Anything else that we should touch on before we wrap this up?
I think that's not all we can say about digital currency. I think it's a good roundup. Yeah,
Jürgen, thank you 1,000 times. And this I hope is a continuous conversation. Should there be an update, we hope that you come and reflect with us on news. Jürgen, thank you 1,000 times for bringing this wonderful conversation to us, and thank you for having it with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we thank you, as always, for listening. And should there be any questions, please chat with us about them. We're happy to also pass them on and try to find answers for you should this have sparked any interest in particulars that we weren't able to cover here. We're very happy to try to help out. Well, thank you again, and thank you for listening. A beautiful weekend and a pleasant and successful week. We're back on Friday, but until then, bye-bye.